Hello and welcome to Saving Animals with Blank Park Zoo. I'm Ryan Bickle. In the next half hour, we'll be talking about marine mammals. And with me today is Megan Wright Walker and, of course, Jesse Lowry. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So this is Jesse Lowry, conservation manager here at Blank Park Zoo. And I think I'll start the program out by just kind of setting the stage a little bit, talking about conservation at Blank Park Zoo. And what we mean by the word conservation is saving wildlife or saving the wild counterparts of the animals that we have here at the zoo. Our mission is to inspire an appreciation of the natural world through conservation, education, research, and recreation. And really, we want to use the zoo as a tool to inspire a behavior change. And the people that come to our zoo, we've got about 500,000 people in our audience every year. And we want to inspire them to care about the natural world and to save animals that are declining. I like to describe it as the zoo is a window to the wild. A place to invite the community, schools, your family, and come and have a nice affordable day out. We've surveyed our audience, and we know that's really important to them. And see the beautiful animals that we have here at the zoo. Look into the eyes of a snow leopard, see the amazing agility of a sea lion. But then how do we turn that sense of awe that we all get when we see these amazing animals into a conservation action, into something that's actually going to make a difference for these animals that we care so much about? And so, you know, just we do that in several different ways. Blank Park Zoo is helping to save animals in several ways. We have local conservation projects like Plant Grow Fly, which is a pollinator conservation project, where we encourage the community to plant butterfly gardens at any scale to help bees and butterflies. We've got a program called Upcycle, where we partner with other community partners and remove invasive plant species from local parks like honeysuckle and mulberry. This gives the native plants opportunity to thrive, and mulberry and honeysuckle just happen to be a favorite treat item of some of our critters here at the zoo. We also try to be as green as possible. Sustainability has a direct effect on our environment and wildlife populations. But the real meat and potatoes of helping to save wildlife is by supporting field organizations. Field organizations are those people that are out on the front lines in the range countries, oftentimes also in the United States, in the natural habitat of these animals working to help save them. And we support many projects like the International Rhino Foundation, Giraffe Conservation Foundation, Hornbill Research Foundation, protecting hornbills in Thailand. We work with folks in Madagascar and really all over the world. And we financially support them, also send them gear. But another way that we can support these field projects is by actually sending our expert staff to help them personally. A lot of these organizations are nonprofits. A lot of them have very small staff. And Blank Park Zoo, we might be kind of a small zoo, but we've got experts in everything from veterinary care to marine mammals, to animal husbandry, experts in giraffe. We've got graphic designers. We've got folks who can make videos. And so by offering these human resources, we can really help build capacity and help these folks who are out on the front lines help save animals. And so really, that's what we're here to talk about today. We started a staff conservation fund a couple years ago. We've got a pocket of money where employees here at the zoo can apply to go work in the field. We had a keeper go and work with rhinos in Uganda, another keeper work with giraffe in Namibia, and Megan, who's here with us today, got to work with marine mammals in California on the West Coast. And she's got an amazing experience to tell us about today. So can you first set the stage a little bit and tell us how long you've been at Blank Park Zoo? What have been your various roles over the years that you've been here with us?
Sure. So I started here as a volunteer, and I did that for about 5 years before I was hired on full-time to work at the zoo. And since then, my role has changed many times. Back when I first started here at the zoo, I worked with the seals, the sea lions, penguins, tortoise, lemurs, and river otters. Then I primarily started taking care of the seals, sea lions, and penguins. Then I started also doing animal training as well as enrichment. And then more recently, I've moved up to the vet clinic where I work with all the animals at the zoo, helping with veterinary care as I'm a registered veterinary technician. And then I still help the keepers with training and enrichment, as well as help take care of our quarantine animals here at the zoo.
So how has your experience over the years here at the zoo prepared you to work with wild marine mammals?
Well, my career started working down with seals and sea lions, and so that was definitely the first start of preparing me to go work with animals in the wild. And then when I moved up to the vet clinic, that just further gave me more experience to be able to go help with these animals and their veterinary care. These animals are stranded. Many of them come in with different health issues. And so between working animals down in the sea lion area as well as working in the veterinary hospital, those two experiences combined really set me up to be able to go help them with the different jobs they needed help with out at the center.
Yeah, tell us, maybe people don't know what a vet tech does. Could you just give us a brief synopsis of what you do every day?
Sure. A vet tech is pretty much like a human nurse. We are right there. We work directly with the veterinarians, providing care for the animals that may be monitoring anesthesia, maybe administering medications. We might be getting meds ready for the animals. We may be prepping for surgery. We have a wide variety of tasks that may not seem like a big deal, but we also order supplies, make sure the vet clinic is stocked and ready. So when the doctor needs something, we have it on site ready to go. We help with getting x-rays ready, set up, or even taking x-rays in some cases. So basically, we're the veterinarian's kind of right hand when it comes to doing the procedures.
And beyond your work at the zoo, you've worked with dogs and cats too, right?
Yep, I do. I work at Iowa Veterinary Specialties, and I have been an emergency veterinary technician for about 20 years now.
That's really exciting. So let's move on to our discussion about marine mammals and tell us about the organization that you worked for through the Staff Conservation Fund and where they're located and, you know, what that organization is working towards.
Sure. So my volunteering was at the Channel Islands Marine Wildlife Institute out in Gaviota, California. It's just about half an hour, I think, south of Santa Barbara, California. They have an old property that was given to them by the Hollister family, I believe it was. And it's an old school that they've made into a rehab facility for marine wildlife that are stranded out along the Ventura and Santa Barbara County coastlines.
How big of an area do they service, you think? How far away?
I believe it's over 100 miles of California coastline.
Wow. So when you went to work for them, tell us about your role in working for that organization.
Sure. So I arrived out there on a Sunday, kind of got acquainted with the staff that works there. They have a trailer on site that they allowed me to stay in, so I got to be right there at the facility the whole time I was out in California. And my first day, which is not a normal first day, they told me, was we went and released a sea lion back into the wild. He was an older male, a year old male, so he was pretty good sized, and he was kind of getting to the point of becoming dangerous to staff to work with because he was so big. He had had a wound. They're not sure what had happened. It looked kind of like a burn or something. So he had been there for about 6 to 8 weeks when I got there and was pretty much eating back to health. He still had a partial wound, but not enough that they were concerned it was going to prohibit him from being able to swim and eat and avoid predators. And so they were a little worried that he was getting too big and getting rambunctious and that he might cause harm to staff, and so they decided it was time to let him go. And so he had a little more protection. They let him go on private property rather than just out in some of the other locations that they release animals.
And so by private property, you mean a section of the coastline that someone has property right there?
Yep.
And so there wasn't as many beachgoers and things around to interfere with the release?
Yeah, exactly. It's a private beach that's right off the California coastline. They had to get special permission to drive on this property to release him. And so the owners of Simwe had gotten that permission. And so we loaded him up, put him on the trucks, and then took lots of pictures. And while we were out there. At first, he didn't want to come out of the crate. He just sat in the crate and wouldn't leave. So we gave him about 5-10 minutes to see if he would come out. And then we slowly started taking the crate apart. And then that was enough to startle him to... Once he left the crate, he was gone. Within about 2 minutes, he was in the ocean, and we saw him float around for a little bit, and then he was off on his own. We did see a pod of 2 to 3 dolphins swim by right after we let him go, so we all felt really good that he'd been let go in a good place and hopefully had been set up to make his new life out in the ocean again.
Yeah, tell us some of the challenges that sea lions face out there.
So, of course, there's humans, boats. They're notorious for causing trouble by getting on fishermen's boats or stealing their fish. Sharks are also a predator of sea lions, and there's plenty of sharks that live out in the area. I personally did not see any, but I did see a shark bite victim my last day that I was at the Channel Islands Marine Wildlife Institute. He had been... washed ashore, and some visitors found him and called in the hotline that they have for stranded marine mammals. And so some volunteers went and picked him up and then brought him back to the center. And so before I left for back home, I got to go help with his medical care to see if we could save him.
So you often hear about these mass stranding events with seals. Is it seals and sea lions, or mostly sea lions? And what do we think causes those mass strandings?
Yeah, those mass strandings are primarily with sea lions. And there's a couple different theories behind them. One of the theories is that the fish are going farther and further away from the coastlines. And so the mothers of these animals have to go out further and further to get food. And then by the time they come back to shore to nurse their pups, their pups have gotten disoriented, or somebody might have called them in as a stranding, or the mothers may not come back in some cases because they're not finding enough food to sustain themselves, let alone sustain a pup. And so over the last few years, from about 2013, I believe this is the first year there wasn't a declared UME. There's been thousands of pups stranded. These facilities will see normally a couple hundred animals from January to April, May, whereas they've been seeing 500 to 1,000 in the first couple months, depending on which facility you talk to.
So when a small pup is called in as a stranded animal, how do the folks at this organization know if it's just waiting for its mother to come back with food?
So usually what they do is they watch it for about 24 hours, unless it's obvious the animal is in distress. They'll put up fencing around the area, and then volunteers will man that area to keep visitors away and kind of watch to see if mom comes back to get them. And then if at that point, if it's been about 12-24 hours, like I said, depending on the pup's health, they'll go ahead and intervene, crate the pup up, and then bring them back to the center for rehabilitation with the eventual release back to the wild.
Sometimes they can't be released back to the wild, and then they have to go and be placed in a place like Blank Park Zoo. What are some of the factors that go into this sea lion can go back to the wild, this one has to stay in human care?
So ideally, they would like to release everybody back to the wild, but as you were saying, that's not necessarily possible. So usually the animals that get put into what they call placement have restranded multiple times. They may have become too people-friendly. They may have some sort of injury that deems them non-releasable. But in most cases, they say they have a 3-strikes-and-you're-out rule, where if the animal restrands 3 times, then a veterinarian has to make the declaration that this animal is not suitable to be left in the wild. And then they talk to NIMFS or NOAA and make the recommendation that this animal needs placement. And then they'll search for a place for this animal to go be placed, usually in a zoo or aquarium. Now, sometimes an animal will get put on the placement list if they're first stranding, if they've had a severe enough injury that's going to limit their ability to survive in the wild. And again, a veterinarian has to make that determination that this animal's not suitable for release and make the recommendation to NOAA that this animal needs placement.
You talked about some of the dangers that are happening to seals and sea lions, people, and perhaps less prey and boats. Was there any indication that the sea lions were coming into contact with trash in the ocean or eating things that they weren't supposed to? Or do they take in any birds? I know that a lot of birds have a problem with that as well.
Sure. Simwe primarily did marine mammals. So the whole time I was there, we had, I believe it was up like 28 to 30 sea lions in their rehab center. They have what they call a hospital area where they have the animals when they initially come into the rehab center to be triaged, as you would say. So basically checking them over, making sure they're healthy, that they're eating, because that's usually the first problem is they're not eating and they're emaciated or they're dehydrated. So they make sure they're good and healthy. They get fed individual meals so they can track how much they're eating. They deworm them, put them on antibiotics if that's necessary. And then after they've been in the inside holding pens for usually a few days to a couple weeks, then they move out to the rehab pens outside where they just mass feed with everybody. But while they're in the indoor pens, like I said, we double check to make sure they're healthy. They weigh them, they measure them. In some cases, x-rays need to be taken. We did have one come in that had fishing line caught around its neck, and so it had a pretty severe neck wound that the volunteers I worked with said that would heal on its own. And it was a concern, but not a concern that this animal wouldn't be able to heal and then be re-released out into the wild. But it had cut into his blubber layer on his neck. And then there was also another one that had a fish hook caught in its lip that they had to remove. And that one pretty quickly went outside into the prepared for release back into the wild pens because it was a pretty minor injury. But the little guy that had the fishing line caught in his neck, he had to stay inside for several weeks before he was healthy enough to go join the group outside.
And I think it's important to note that it's not just trash coming from that local area. Even trash that we discard here in Iowa, plastic bags and fishing line can go right down the Mississippi into the Gulf of Mexico, and really only takes a few days in some cases for trash to get down there. And so it's important for local people here in Iowa as well to really take care of plastics and make sure that they're recycling and decreasing the use of plastics overall. And of course, we've got lots of native critters that could get caught up, like turtles and herons and things like that. Tell us more about your day-to-day. What was it like working for them? What were some of your duties? How were you able to really make an impact for this organization?
Sure. So I think my experience was a little different than some of the keepers that have gone out there. They've had keepers from many different zoos and aquariums across the country come out and volunteer. Being a vet tech, I was able to help them with some other projects that they don't normally have a volunteer to help with. So during the day, I would help with feeding and cleaning and medicating all the animals. And then usually we were done by about between 1 and 2 in the afternoon. So then since I was staying on grounds, they'd give me extra projects to work on. And one of the projects was to reorganize the pharmacy. They had a whole bunch of donated medications. Because they're a wildlife rehab center, they can get donations from human hospitals as well as vet clinics. And so they had a lot of supplies that had been donated that nobody had time to go through and organize. So I spent several afternoons going through organizing, making sure the drugs were categorized by the type of medication, whether it was an antibiotic, gastric meds, vitamins or supplements and things like that. And so I went through and completely reorganized their pharmacy for them to make it easier. So when their vet came in, all he had to do was go to the section and grab what he needed instead of trying to search through boxes and things. And then they had a huge auditorium where they had all kinds of medical supplies that had been donated by hospitals that they didn't need these supplies anymore. And they were getting ready to go through an inspection in the upcoming months, kind of like an AZA inspection at a zoo. And so I helped go through and organize all those supplies and get it organized by the needles and the syringes and gowns and things like that. And we threw away stuff they weren't going to need to try to make things a little more tidy and organized for them.
What was the feeling that you got from the local folks who lived in that area? And were they just used to seeing stranded marine mammals? And did they have the phone number, the hotline, like on speed dial on their phone? How often does this happen? And, you know, how much support did this organization get from their local community?
They seem to be very popular in their local community. When I visited, it was in June. So that's kind of the tail end when a lot of the strandings occur. Typically, there's a lot more strandings from February to April. And so we had, I think, three or four come in over my week there. But there's definitely signs all over the place that talk about, you know, don't approach marine mammals. You're not allowed to touch them. They're protected by the U.S. Marine Mammal Protection Act. And so there's signs on all the beaches and coastline that talk about, you know, if you see a stranded marine mammal, call this number, then a volunteer will be dispatched to come evaluate the situation, and then they'll contact Channel Islands to find out, you know, if the animal needs to come in to be assessed or if they're just going to watch it and see what happens. So they do all along the Santa Barbara coastline as well as up into Ventura County. So when I went on a second release later in the week where we took two animals out to the Channel Islands and released them. And so when we went to the Channel Islands, they have a relationship with a tour boat company that allows them two seats on the boat along with the sea lions. And we go out with a bunch of tourists, and then we dropped the tourists off at the island, and then we drove to kind of a cove out back where there weren't as many people, and we let these two go together. And so it was pretty cool being on the boat, and all the people kept realizing it was a very foul smell, of course. And so visitors kept coming over and asking, what is in that crate, you know? And so we would explain that these were two rehab sea lions that we were relocating out to the Channel Islands, where they could, there's a big rookery of island, of sea lions that live out on San Miguel Island. And so the hope was that they would go rejoin that group out there.
So it's not like with primate societies, is there any competition and a hierarchy where if you release these animals and there's other males around, is that something that you have to worry about?
I don't think the degree that you do with primates. You know, usually there's one big male that has his section of beach when it's breeding season. We were releasing these guys towards the end of breeding season, so everybody's kind of off doing their own thing, feeding, taking care of their pups that they had. And so they felt pretty good about releasing them in this area because it's a protected area, and also there's known fish population, so they would have plenty of food to eat.
What surprised you about your trip?
It's amazing how much work they do that is all volunteers. All of the people that do the rescues and that do the response teams are all volunteers. Tim, we had one paid person, and she just recently became paid full-time. But before that, she had been volunteer too. So there's the two owners of it, Ruth and Sam Dover, and then they have Jen Levine, who's their one employee who gets paid through federal grants. And then all the rest of the people that I met all week were all volunteer that would come on a daily basis to help take care of the animals. And they do that weekends, holidays, year-round.
How are you able to incorporate your experience into your normal day-to-day job at Blink Park Zoo?
So it was very fun working with the people out there to learn about their experiences, how, you know, they sort fish and where they get their products from. And then also I was able to use veterinary skills there as well as bring some stuff home that I learned of how they do it to try to help our vet team here as well as our animal care staff to be able to work with our animals to get sample, like blood samples per se, that we need to check our own animals' health. They do it so often out there that it's pretty much second nature, whereas here we tend to only take samples if our animals are sick and need something. And so I got pointers from them that I could bring home and show to staff back here at the zoo of how they did it out there.
I want to save a little time to talk about our pinnipeds here at the zoo. And of course, pinnipeds are sea lions, seals, and walruses. Before we move on to that, is there anything else that you wanted to share about your experience in California? Any other stories that you wanted to share?
While I was there, I had some free time. And one of the places that they recommended I go check out was called Carpinteria. It's called Carpinteria. And they have a Harbor Seal rookery there. And it was actually very cool because I spent a couple hours up there one night. But while we were watching Shark Week on TV the other night, they actually talked about the Carpinteria seal rookery and how they thought that maybe that was part of the reason sharks were coming back to that area of California, because the seal population has drastically increased there. And so they were thinking that that could be a possibility of why. And so it was kind of cool because I had been there. And so I had gotten to see the rookery area for a couple hours when I was visiting.
So talk about our pinnipeds at Blank Park Zoo.
All right. So we have currently, we have five pinnipeds here. We have three California sea lions, two of which were rescue rehab animals. And then we have two harbor seals who are also rescue rehab animals. Two of our sea lions, Addie and Zoe, both came from California. One came from Sausalito Marine Mammal Center, and the other one came from Fort MacArthur Marine Mammal Center. And then the two harbor seals came from the Vancouver Marine Mammal Rescue Center up in Vancouver, Canada.
So what are their stories? Do you know much about why they were stranded and how they ended up with us?
Sure. Zoe and Addie were young pups when they stranded. Addie was actually part of a research project out on the Channel Islands. She has a large brand on her side that's very visible to the public. And that brand was part of their research project so that they could identify the pinnipeds out there, who their mother was, how long they stayed with their mom. They've been studying milk composition, what they eat, how much they eat. And unfortunately, Addie had stranded at a very young age and was dehydrated, malnourished. And so she was brought into the rehab center, nursed back to health, and then deemed non-releasable. I'm not 100% sure why she was deemed non-releasable, but she had been. And so I was actually one of the keepers that traveled out to California to bring her back home. To live. And then I think Zoe had a similar story to Addie, that she was found emaciated on the beach, was called in by the volunteers and brought into the Sausalito Marine Mammal Center, and then was brought here to Blank Park Zoo. And then Ross and Maru, the female harbor seal Maru, has a paralyzed hind flipper. The Vancouver Rehab Center had done lots of tests to try to determine why she was paralyzed, but couldn't determine what had caused her injury or how to fix it. And so she was deemed non-releasable. And then Ross, the male harbor seal, he had some eye issues, and he was also very attracted to people, and so he kept showing up where people were. So between his eye issue and his like of people, it was deemed not safe for him to be left in the wild, and so they came to live here at the Blank Park Zoo too.
So you mentioned you helped transport back one of the sea lions. How exactly do you transport a sea lion across the United States?
Well, we actually FedExed her back to Des Moines, Iowa. We met at the rehab center at like 5 o'clock in the morning, got her loaded up, drove her to the airport. We all went through security at FedEx, and then me and another keeper had to go from the FedEx security checkpoint to the plane, and we rode in the plane back in the cargo area. They have seats for people that can ride in, and we met the pilots, and they pretty much said, you know, you can check on her, just let us know. We had a microphone so we could talk to them, and they said, just let us know if you need to look in on her or anything. And so usually every couple hours we'd check in on her to make sure she was doing okay. And then we had a brief layover in Memphis, and then we came on to Des Moines, and people from the zoo picked us up at the airport.
And finally, one thing that the public can do to help in the health care of our pinnipeds at Blank Park Zoo.
Not throw coins in the water. We found a lot of coins recently, and zinc toxicity is a big issue with their health care. We have found many pennies in Addie and have had to do endoscopy to remove those pennies a couple times. And unfortunately, most of them have been from the year where zinc was an issue. And if I remember correctly, it's after 1982, those pennies were stopped being made with more copper and they're more zinc.
So, yeah, that's one thing that we need people to do, is not throw coins in the pool.
And actually not throw any foreign objects in the pool.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, Megan, thanks a lot for joining us today. Blank Park Zoo is open year-round and open 7 days a week. You can learn all about the zoo, such as the animals, special events, previous episodes of this show, and more at blankparkzoo.com. Make sure you check out our YouTube channel, where there's lots of fun video of our seals and sea lions. That's all the time we have today. Please make sure you join us again for Saving Animals with Blank Park Zoo.